This is Katie Ruther speaking with Ernest Martin on August 31st, 2020.
To begin with, I was wondering if you could introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about how you got into food and agriculture.
Well, I grew up in a conventional dairy farm in Pennsylvania. When I was 20, my dad was ready to retire, so land prices were kind of high in Pennsylvania, and I wanted more acreage. So in 94, we made the move to Ohio here. My wife and I, we got married and moved out here, brought my dad's herd out here, and my dad's dairy herd. So I've always been in dairy. It's the only life that I know. But the one big difference is I was raised on a conventional confinement dairy, and we slowly made the change to grazing in the mid-90s, and by 99-2000 we were 99 we certified some of the land, and in 2000 we certified the rest of the land and also the dairy herd.
And could you describe your current operation?
So the current operation here, we have it's about 170 acres. We're in the process of transitioning the land. We just bought additional 20 acres that we're transitioning. So there's about 140-50 acres certified organic here. We are basically half of the land is in pasture, and the rest of the land is in row crops and alfalfa hay or alfalfa grass hay mixed for the dairy herd. We're currently milking around, we have about a 90 to 95 cow herd, some mixed breeds, but we're transitioning the herd to totally Jerseys due to smaller cows that do well in grazing and higher butterfat and protein. So we keep the heifers on another farm. Somebody else that raises my heifers for me. I pay him so much a day to feed my heifers on an organic certified farm as well. He doesn't have an opportunity. He's not able to milk himself. So he likes this opportunity, or he sees this as an opportunity to be able to raise my heifers for me, replacement heifers for the herd here. Yeah, like I said before, we'll be certified this fall. It's 21 years since we've been certified.
Wow. Do you feed any grain, or are you all grass-fed?
We do feed some grain. We consider ourselves a low-grain herd. We feed a little bit of corn silage and some grain, mainly just a little bit of corn and some soybeans for protein, and also some corn silage. But the bulk of the ration is hay or baleage. Summertime, we run about 50 to 70% pasture for the milking cows. Now, the larger heifers and the dry cows are 100% pasture. But for the lactating animals, it's, like I said, between 50% and 70% dry matter is coming off of pastures that we rotationally graze.
So what were some of your biggest motivations for transitioning to organic and then becoming certified?
Well, I guess we started out doing grazing, rotational grazing, transitioning the herd slowly from a confinement dairy to rotational grazing, and we saw a lot of benefits for the cows, health-wise and so on. Also somewhat a reduced workload. So once we started rotational grazing, it just made sense to not use any chemical fertilizers or herbicides, any pesticides, I guess I should say, any of the sides.
Mm-hmm.
So the corn ground, we still had, we could have used some herbicides, but since we weren't raising a huge amount of acreage anymore, it was very manageable to manage that organically as well. So it just made a lot of sense, being we were already that close to being certified, to just take the step and get certified. And probably back in the late 90s, it was milk price was part of the reason that we did it. But after we were certified, there's so much else that comes into play that makes sense ecologically. I just feel it's farming in harmony with nature. When you look at the whole picture, herbicides really play havoc with the ecological system on a farm. I feel if we we try to mimic nature as much as we can, by rotational grazing. We do plow occasionally for our corn crop, but it's just once every couple years, or not, it's actually more than just a couple years. So it's like every 5 years or so we raise a corn crop, but then it's in hay, and that allows the land to heal. We have very little water leaving the farm. We raise our organic matter by in the soils, the carbon content, the soils, go up when you rotationally graze, and also when you grow hay. It just allows the soil to heal itself. So it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So you're part of Organic Valley, correct?
Yes, we are.
And how long have you been part of Organic Valley?
We started when we got certified in 99, 2000. There was no organic milk market here in Ohio, so a group of us, we wanted to market organic milk, so we started our own little co-op. We found out that we were better farmers than marketers. So in the fall of 2002, we as a group finally convinced Organic Valley to come to Ohio, and we joined as a group here in November of 2002.
And what does it entail to be a part of Organic Valley?
Well, basically, it's a membership agreement. Really, if you just want a place to market your milk, it's a membership agreement where you agree to abide by organic rules and regulations. And in addition, there's some rules that Organic Valley has. In addition to, we have our own herd health standards above organic certification, NOP, the National Organic Program. We have our own. So there's some things that we do in addition. But as far as just simply being what's required, just mainly being certified organic and coming up to some of the extra requirements that that Organic Valley has. Personally, I like being involved I love being a part of Organic Valley, so I try to give back as much as I can by being involved in numerous committees with Organic Valley.
Yeah, that's great. And what would you say, you just alluded to this a little bit, but what would you say are some of the biggest differences between being a part of Organic Valley versus being an independent organic dairy farmer?
Well, there's ownership is number one. The farmer members that belong to Organic Valley are we have an ownership in the company. We have skin in the game, so to speak. We are able to influence through various committees, through various avenues that the co-op provides for us, influence decisions. As far as the end product and so on, I guess your question was some of the major differences are, by influence, by being owners of the co-op, we're able to help make decisions as to the future of organics. Actually, not just in Organic Valley, but nationally as well. Back before there was a grazing standard for Organic Valley or for organics at all, Organic Valley was in the forefront. And so we made a requirement for all members to you have to graze to be part of Organic Valley. So we brought grazing into the national picture by in the by doing that, stepping out and saying that this is what needs to be done, and you know, asking the NOSB to make some rules accordingly. So they pretty much adopted what we had been doing. You know, the Organic Valley, there's some huge mega dairies, but if you're part of Organic Valley, we're just, a lot of us are smaller organic family, certified family farms. We don't have these huge mega dairies like some of the dairies, like, you know, some of the private entities or corporations do. Mm-hmm. So it gives a small family farm a chance to, you know, speak up and be heard in the organic world as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say some of the biggest differences between organic dairy farmers and, say, organic vegetable or fruit farmers would be?
Are you talking about, are you asking about Organic Valley or as organics as a whole?
Either or both.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm personally, you know, we farm or we garden organically as well for our own household use, my wife and I and our family, which I apologize, I forgot to introduce at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife and I, along with, we have 10 children, 3 of them are married now.
Mm-hmm.
So we garden, we grow most of our own vegetables, actually all our own vegetables, summertime use, and most of them for the wintertime use as well. We can and so on, can and freeze a lot. So I appreciate what organic vegetable farmers do, but one thing that, and there's some organic vegetable farmers that do this, but I think one major difference is, you know, we bring livestock into the picture. I think that's a big part of the whole of the circle. If you go to nature, wildlife is always involved in the holistic circle of life. So that's, I think that's one thing that, and I don't want to say this as a blanket statement, but livestock farmers usually, you know, it completes the cycle of, you know, bringing nutrients in and recycling them back out on the land again. Where vegetable farmers, it's a little more, you're feeding humans and you know, that waste doesn't come back on the land like it does with livestock farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And you mentioned before that you're Mennonite.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could talk about how being Mennonite informs the way you view and practice agriculture.
Well, it's, you know, being Mennonite, I'm trying to think of how to bring this into perspective, I guess. Mennonites as a whole, we farm in a smaller way. We don't have these huge mega farms as much. You know, we don't have the CAFOs. So farming this way, you know, kind of reflects what we've always done as a community, smaller farms, livestock farms usually, where we bring, you know, it's more of a complete circle. We don't, trying to think, you know, it's not as much just farming thousands of acres and shipping the crops off the farm, where you know, where it's, the nutrients are never recycled or brought back onto the farm again.
Mm-hmm.
As a whole, Mennonites usually have livestock, where you complete the circle of life. You feed that grain or hay or whatever to your livestock. You take the waste back out on the fields, or the fertilizer that the animals produce back out on the fields, and it completes a circle. As far as being Mennonite, you know, it's farming has been a way of our life. Agriculture has been a way of Mennonite life. You know, back to as far as I can search in my family history, back to Switzerland, back in the 1500s, you know, we've been agriculturalists pretty much. I guess it's in our blood. I'm not sure if that's the answer you were looking for.
Yeah, definitely. And would you say that the views that you hold as a Mennonite sort of go hand in hand with the views that you hold as an organic farmer?
It definitely helps. Yes, you know, as a Mennonite, we're all part of the community. Our church group is a pretty close knit group. You know, if there's if something happens, you know, in the community, disaster, whatever, we're always there to help each other. And as an organic community, I think it, you know, especially being part of Organic Valley, it kind of mirrors that as well. It's not as much each for himself. It's more of I would say the community has a large impact on what, you know, the decisions we make. Community is usually taken into consideration, and as part of Organic Valley, it's the same way. You know, when we at Organic Valley look at, or the farmers or the board look at things that you know, we do, we always look at the impact it has on a farming community. And also, not just the farming community, but to the, you know, to the earth as well, you know, to the land and so on. You know, we always try to take the whole into consideration. And I think that being part of the organic or part of the Mennonite community, that has helped me. Not to say that you have to be part of the Mennonite community to appreciate that. There's a lot of other people that do it as well who are not Mennonite, who get that as well. But I think that's something that mirrors what we do in the organic community as well, or quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you discussed this a little bit earlier, too, and then also in the context of being Mennonite, but what would you say are some of the core tenets or values that are at the heart of organic agriculture for you?
Well, when I make decisions on my farm, I always like to look at, it's very hard to separate just one particular thing out. You know, number one, we have to be profitable, but we cannot sacrifice environment or anything else for the sake of profitability, because I am a believer in the, you know, if I don't take environment or the life of my animals or the life of that's in the earth, you know, in my fields, in the soil, if I don't take that into consideration when I make decisions, you know, it's all part of the whole. It's part of, you know, we do grazing, and you know, there's something about going out there. I'm gonna, you know, branch out a little bit here, but, you know, take my pastures for instance. It's very important to me that I manage those pastures in a way that it'll support wildlife, birds especially, not just birds, but insects, beneficial insects, birds, pollinators. You know, one thing that I do, you know, we mow our pastures at times, but I don't mow. I used to, you know, take into consideration aesthetics quite a bit, and mm-hmm. I still think it's important to have a neat farm, but I cannot mow pastures for aesthetics at the expense of monarchs or bobolinks or a lot of the birds, monarch butterflies or the bobolinks or the meadowlarks or all the other songbirds that are out there. You know, since we've managed to farm this way, we've seen a huge amount of increase in butterflies. You know, when I go out mowing pastures, I don't mow definitely not before July 1st or hardly ever. And when I talk about mowing pastures, I'm talking about clipping, you know, weeds and seed heads after the cows have grazed them. So it's always, you know, we take into consideration what stage the birds are in as far as nesting. And, you know, if I see milkweed out there, which is a food for the butterflies, I always just, you know, go around that. I don't clip that. It's very important that I love seeing nature. So being out there seeing the monarch butterflies and swallowtails, we try to manage a farm. In addition for profits, we try to manage it for the health of the soil, the life of the soil, and also the health and life of the wildlife on top of the soil. There's a lot of wildlife. I guess you wouldn't necessarily call it wildlife, but there's a lot of life in the soil that we are stewards of, and we can kill that life if we're not careful. So it's important to be profitable. If I'm not profitable, I cannot afford to be remain on the land. And so we've got to be profitable, but we've also got to take into consideration that we don't destroy what we have that helps us be profitable. So everything goes hand in hand.
Yeah. And what would you say organic agriculture broadly, its role is in today's food system?
Well, it's a way to provide a healthy, nutritious food. I think a lot of our food being produced today lacks nutrition. I'm talking about conventional food, and I think organic food allows us to produce a healthy food. It allows us as stewards of the earth to make a living while still providing habitat for wildlife, for the insects, the beneficials, the pollinators, and so on. I think we need to influence other farmers, conventional farmers, by being, we've got to be profitable. We also have to have neat farms. So I think one of our roles is to, have farmsteads that appear friendly, as far as friendly to wildlife, friendly to other, not a huge monoculture that looks sterile. It's one thing that I always struggle with, and we're getting into that a little bit with organic value or organic agriculture as a whole as well. But you see these huge mega farms with signs up, do not enter, and it just kind of disconnects people with farming. And I think our role is to bring the consumer and the farm back together again.
That's a good segue because I'm curious on the consumer side how you think consumers view organic agriculture.
Well, I think there's it depends a lot on the consumer. I think the educated consumer realizes that organic agriculture cares for the earth, and I think they view organic as part of the future. I guess I'm a little concerned about some consumers in America as a whole. We look at cheap food. All we care about is how cheap we can get our food. We never worry about how much we spend for entertainment and so on, but when it comes to food, it seems like we're always too conscious of price. And unfortunately, that translates, not just, if it's cheap on the table, cheap at the grocery store, unfortunately there is a price to pay on the for the environment and so on. That is not taken into consideration.
Yeah. Would you say consumers, in your opinion, fully appreciate what you're trying to do on your farm?
There's a lot of consumers that do, and it has increased quite a bit in the last 20 years since we started. Organic definitely has a much more wider support from consumers, from the general population than it did 20 years ago. That has definitely improved quite a bit. But there's still a good portion of consumers that don't realize what, goes into organic agriculture.
Yeah, that's a good point. Would there be anything in particular that you wish consumers understood or were aware of when it comes to organic agriculture broadly or specifically how you practice organic agriculture?
You know, I guess that last part, you know, we don't have, you know, we try to farm as much with nature as possible so that, you know, the more we try to mimic nature, the more we take some of the variables out or some of the, trying to think of the word, we're a little more susceptible to diseases and so on. We cannot use chemicals and sprays and so on as much as a conventional population can or conventional farming can. So there's a price tag attached to some of that. You know, that's one of the reasons why organic food is a little more expensive. We can mimic nature quite a bit, but if there is conventional agriculture has a lot of quick fixes that we cannot use, or neither do we wish to use them, but it may raise the price of food a little bit, you know, not being able to go out and use some of those quick fixes, even though they're hard on the environment, they will help produce a nice crop, not necessarily a healthy crop, but that's one of the things I wish we could convey to consumers. You know, there's a lot of a smaller farm, which will, you know, increase the food price. It takes more manpower to produce that product than it would on a conventional farm, where you can go out and I'm not sure if I'm making myself clear here, but definitely helps, you know, raise the price of the food, not being able to use all the big, you know, the chemicals, the fertilizers, and so on, as conventional agriculture can use.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to make. I think a lot of consumers lack awareness about the actual reasons for higher prices of organic products.
Mm-hmm.
And related to that, there we see today within the organic landscape sort of different factions that have split off into farmers and producers who have various views on organic certification. And I was wondering what your personal view on organic certification is.
So I guess could you broaden that a little, or could you clarify that a little bit for me? Some of these different factions that you're alluding to?
Yeah, so some farmers and producers sort of having the opinion that with the industrialization and commercialization of organic, it's perhaps kind of been watered down, and the standards that the USDA abides by perhaps are not quite aligned with the original values of organic.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think we've got to be very, very careful that we don't deviate from the original, you know, the intent. You know, I take grazing for instance. There's some people that would say that you know, it's not all that important to graze. It's having cows out on pasture is the main thing, but I think it's very important that we, you know, when that rule was made, it was to ensure that cows actually are able to, you know, to graze, and you know, I think we've got to stay as close to the original, you know, the intent of the original rule as possible. Yeah, I'm also a little concerned about these huge mega farms, you know, turning organics into CAFOs or turning it into a commodity. My viewpoint, I guess, is to stay as close to nature as we possibly can. And, you know, I guess I would do that whether we have strengthening of the rules or not. It's just the way that I feel that it should be done on my farm. So, I struggle with that some, you know, in my mind, how can we bring it back to what it was 20 years ago. Then the next time I'm asking myself, have we actually, you know, strayed that much from the original rule? It's, you know, I struggle with that a little bit. Whether we actually have, or are we just, you know, actually, you know, have we actually strayed that far? I don't know.
Yeah. And really related to that, I'm curious if you could speak to some of the changes that you've seen in food and agriculture, and especially within the organic food movement in the last few decades.
Well, it's there's been a huge movement for larger, and that's, you know, that's probably been happening for a you know, number of centuries, I guess, but or at least in the last century, larger and larger animal populations, concentrated animal populations. So if you do that, you're taking all those nutrients, you know, let's say I'm going to use general terms here, but you know, if you grow all the corn in Iowa and have all the hog farms in Illinois or vice versa, you know, you're shipping that feed a long ways, and you're not necessarily taking that animal manure fertilizer back to where the feed was grown for those animals. So there's a huge disconnect where we're, especially in the last 60 years, you know, that's been happening, you know, quite a bit. But it just seems everybody's getting bigger and bigger, and it just, you know, the problem's just not going away at all, where there's this movement of nutrients from one area of the state or country to another area. It just, you know, I think that's worse than it ever has been before. Also, when I look at the community around me, you know, the dairies going out of business, well, the dairy, not in just my immediate community, but in the dairy community as a whole, since I started farming, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, there's been a tremendous decrease in the number of dairy farms, but the cow number actually has increased. So farmers are getting bigger and bigger all the time. So you take management away from a lot of people and you put it into the hands of a few. You take that wealth away from a huge community. Instead of having 100 farms that support the community, you now have 10 mega farms that you know, have a lot of labor. That, you know, how well is that labor used? I'm, you know, what are the living conditions of those laborers on that farm? Whereas if you had small family farms, they were part of the community. They were able to make decisions on their own. So it's just, you know, that's the biggest thing I've seen is the number of farms getting larger, and you know, number of farms getting less and the farms getting much larger. And that's a huge concern to me, community-wise, and you know, it's just not good for community.
And in terms of the organic food movement, you really started farming organically sort of on the front end of the establishment of USDA organic certification, and I'm curious to know if there have been significant changes you've seen in the last 20 years in that area.
You know, when we started, there was the NOP wasn't in effect yet, but I guess we were all kind of welcoming that at the time, or a lot of us were, some of us were, you know, somewhat, you know, there were definitely reservations, you know, once you put certification in the hands of the government. What that has done, it's, or the intent was to, you know, level the playing field between certifying agencies. You know, some agencies required much more than others back in the day before NOP. I think the danger in the NOP is lobbyists may have, it just like everything else, and I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist here either, but I guess if you take the control of certification and put it into the hands of the government, my fear is, will the richest people, that are able to spend a lot of money lobbying in Washington, are they going to be able to determine what the rules will be in the future? I'd hate to say that has happened a lot, but it's also, I guess I'd be foolish to say that it hasn't occurred at all in the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's something that I've seen with the, with the NOP coming into play, or the USDA. But there's good as well. That USDA sticker, people are pretty much able to see that it's been USDA certified. I would say somewhat strengthened the organic rule or the organic integrity. But there's also, before there was people saying organically grown, and they might not have used chemicals that year, instead of transitioning land for 3 years and then growing organic crops on it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two sides to that, both good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as organic has gained strength in the last few decades, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that still exist to its development and spread?
I guess one challenge is the commercialization of organics. And I guess I see that as a challenge to small farms. What can we do to, remain independent and not be part of the huge the commodification of organics? I guess I see that as a problem for the smaller organic grower. Our universities are, and not all of them, but they're. They get a lot of funding from these huge chemical corporations.
Mm.
So it is very hard for universities to, I shouldn't say it's hard, but I'm trying to think how to word this without, just casting a bad light on chemical companies, but they're not going to give up easily. They've enjoyed huge profits for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're able to basically buy research, and there's not as much money available in the organic world, I guess. So research is a little harder to come by. I'd hate to say, to go as far as to say that universities are biased, because of the money they receive. But, let's face it, they are funded largely by, there's some taxpayer money, but there's also a huge amount of chemical money going into those universities and the agriculture universities. So it's hard to, it would be foolish to say that they are not influenced at all by chemical money. And I see that as a, huge detriment to the advancement of organic agriculture. There's some that have small organic programs, but funding is hard to come by for that.
Hmm.
I'm not saying all universities are the same, but it's definitely something that I see in some of the university research that I've seen.
Hmm. And now I was just wondering if we could turn toward the current COVID pandemic and talk a bit about the impact that COVID is having on your farm.
Okay. So do you have a question to start that conversation, or?
Yeah, sure. So of course, many people are facing major impacts on their farm. So I was wondering if there have been specific things that have changed for you in terms of how you're running your farm or your channels through Organic Valley for selling your milk.
Well, you know, as far as the actual, farmers are considered an essential service. So, you know, I will say my suppliers have been very understanding, and there's some things that probably, you know, have been harder to come by, but you know, the suppliers realize that agriculture has got to go on, and so they've been working quite hard to make things available for farms, so it's not really impacted me as much in that sense. I will say it's kind of a being part of Organic Valley, we get together, you know, once or twice a year as leaders, working to improve the co-op, working, you know, the farmer side of things, and also, you know, production and sales. So we're not able to do that, and that's been hard mentally. But as far as it's not impacted me as much as it has my conventional neighbors. Organic Valley has done a tremendous job in smoothing out, the sales extremes, the ups and the downs. But if you look at my conventional neighbors, milk price have dropped like a rock. My neighbors were asked, some of them were asked to dump milk initially, right when COVID started. And soon after that, milk prices went through the roof. They were, they couldn't get it to market fast enough. And now subsequently, it's been going back down again, not quite as low as it had been, but it's very unstable at this time. But on my farm, it's actually really been pretty stable. Probably one of the things that affects me the most is, we've been doing some building repairs and so on, and lumber is hard to come by. But other than that, it's not really affected us that much. We lead a somewhat isolated life on the farm compared to what the general population does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And you just touched on this briefly, but I was going to ask you if you thought being organic has given you an advantage amidst the pandemic.
I would say it has. It's been much more stable for us. The prices of our products has been, especially dairy, has been much more stable than conventional. So I think that would, vegetable farmers might give you a different story. I don't know, but it's definitely helped the local food movement. I think that's a silver lining in this cloud is, it has been a tremendous boon to the local food movement. If you talk to direct marketers and so on, they cannot produce things fast enough. So if you're a small organic vegetable grower or meat or, whatever, it's been a huge improvement. I shouldn't say improvement, but it's definitely been a tremendous blessing to those people.
Yeah, that seems like that's what I've been hearing across the board for sure. And then my last question is just about what your hopes are for the future of our food system.
Well, my hope is that we can keep on converting the conventional land to agriculture, that we can, educate consumers that organic food is more nutritious, that it organic farmers care for the environment, that, there is hope in this there's a lot of people that are concerned about climate change and the more grass that we grow for the more animals that we feed, grass to, there's a carbon sink. Grass is a tremendous carbon sink. So with organic agriculture, we can improve a lot of these things by, farming with nature. My hope is to educate the consumers about that, what we do, to help the environment, the earth, wildlife, insects, butterflies, on and on. There's so much that we can do, and there's hope out there. I'm excited about the future of organic dairy or organics as a whole.
Well, those are all of the prepared questions I have for you. I don't know if you want to add anything else.
Yeah, you really don't have anything else to add unless you can think of anything that I didn't touch.
No, that was great. It was really interesting hearing your experiences and what your perspectives are.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. No problem. So,
all right. Well, sure. Yeah, that sounds great.
Sure.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.